diverse, independent, yours. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoints on today's show. Some Montrealers are taking matters into their own hands to find innovative and cost-effective solutions to affordable housing.
We've seen community bonds becoming very popular in Ontario specifically, a little bit in other provinces now in Canada, and in Quebec more and more.
Mount Allison University is investing close to $100 million in its library and new multi-sport complex.
So this will be not just a facility of the university. The library needs to be a facility for the whole community as well as communities of scholars, researchers around the country and indeed around the world.
A school in Ontario revamps its app, partly to turn away from X.
We didn't have the people power to respond to some of these comments that were less useful, less on topic, and then in some cases just completely against our code of conduct.
Women's hockey hits Vancouver and veteran goalie Megan Moore reflects on the impact of the professional women's league.
And now we have all these younger girls who are, you know, they're so excited. They have some place to look forward to play in their older years. For me, it wasn't there. And I think back to the Ottawa home opener last year where somebody was holding up a sign that said, like, if I had known this was an option, I would have trained harder.
And the Forks Foundation launches the Trail Together campaign. Winnipeggers can now adopt a section of the trail that runs along the Red and Annisboyne Rivers. Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello, thanks for being with us this week. My name is Boris Chassin and I'll be with you for the next half hour. As promised in our intro, we'll first head to Montreal where Park Extension's Brick by Brick organization, or Brick par Brick in French, is looking to leverage community support through a tool called the Community Bond. Since 2016, the Brick by Brick has been actively involved in the Part X neighborhood, providing cultural programming, town halls, and mutual aid. But they've also been developing affordable housing in the neighborhood with community bonds, a form of investment from individuals who believe in their mission. These community bonds offer individuals the chance to invest in a nonprofit instead of donating. Though investors' returns are often below market, they make a big difference in helping community groups take on big projects, say experts. Jules Bugel in Montreal spoke to Brique par Brique Faiz Abouani, as well as with Emeline Le Guin and Caroline Rompré, both behind the community bond called L'Ampli, the Amplifier, about this social economy tool.
As rents in Montreal continue to rise, organizers in Park Extension are taking matters into their own hands. Brick by Brick has been serving the largely low-income immigrant neighborhood of Park X since 2016. In that time, founder and director Faiz Abouani says he's seen the housing on offer stray further and further from the needs of the local community.
The private developers, when they can build, they build for people who can afford to pay to buy expensive condos or who can afford very expensive rents.
At the same time, Quebec has shifted its priorities from social to affordable housing, a move that he says makes it harder for groups like his to build themselves.
There's a huge backlog and a lot of challenges in terms of the funding because the provincial government, which is responsible for housing, has cut the housing program. So people who build housing are no longer able to do so. What we're trying to do at Brick by Brick is effectively build housing projects and community centers where it's not possible.
That's where community bonds come in. The bond is similar to other investment products, but instead of putting your money in a financial institution, you put it into an accredited community organization for a return that's often a little lower than market value for investors, but much more significant to the groups they help.
Generally, the leverage effect is 10 times. So for $1 of a community bond invested by an investor, you will raise $10 throughout all the financial ecosystem.
This is Emeline Le Guin, who coordinates the Fonds L'Ampli program at the Chantier de l'Économie Sociale. L'Ampli is both a program that helps nonprofits start community bond campaigns and a fund that matches community investments up to $100,000 with a loan, no guarantee necessary. Caroline Rompré, from the fund's financial partner at the Réseau d'Investissement Social du Québec, says the initiative started as a way to fill a gap in the community sector.
So Le Fonds L'Ampli is meant to address the problem of down payments that is often difficult to find for organizations and social economy enterprises, and whose contribution is really essential to start up businesses or projects.
Since 2023, they've helped seven organizations raise $500,000 in investments and have provided $500,000 in loans to match. And they say they have twice as many projects in the pipeline.
We've seen community bonds becoming very popular in Ontario specifically, a little bit in other provinces now in Canada, and in Quebec more and more.
Brick by Brick first turned to community bonds back in 2017, when they were still a relatively new tool in the province. For the next year, they raised more than $300,000 in investments to finance affordable housing in the neighborhood, an amount he says was possible due to ParkX's strong and diverse community.
So we have people who are struggling financially in our community, but we also have people who support the work that we do and that either come from privilege or have benefited from the privilege that comes from having a good education, knowing the right people. So we're asking, I guess, people who have more resources to invest in our project.
Brick by Brick used their first community bond campaign to help finance construction of a 31-unit residential building. But with that project still under development, Abwani says they've had to shift priorities for round two.
Our main objective right now with the bond is to move our community center because it's too small and there's too high demand. And our community center is probably like the most impactful project that we have right now. Housing takes years, really, honestly, it takes years to build. With the permits, with the city that you have to obtain, the architectural plans that you have to develop, the negotiation with the owners.
This time around, Brick by Brick is looking to build a $5 million fund. Unrealistic for the community sector? Not according to the folks at L'Ampli.
Generally, in like crowdfunding, donation crowdfunding, you'll still go towards like smaller amounts, whereas in community bond campaigns, we've seen campaigns raising millions.
But for Le Guin, it's about more than just the money. It's part of a larger vision of a social economy.
We're facing so many crises these days, I don't think I need to get on this one, that are linked to a way of doing economics that is very extractive. And the social economy provides this balance between being able to create your own revenue, maybe having subsidies on top of it, right? But it's mostly being autonomous in your own revenue compared to nonprofit that will be only subsidized.
We were already trending towards divestment on the part of the government in housing in 2018. And when I was like, we need to do this on our own, like we cannot rely on government.
Abwani says he supports the fight for more government funding when it comes to social housing. But that won't stop the folks at Brick by Brick from trying to meet the community's needs however they can.
Before I die, I want to see housing units, you know, that are being delivered to low-income people. And I want to build a model that produces affordable housing at scale. Like, that's my goal. And if the government wants to be a partner, great. And if it doesn't, then it shouldn't impact like the objective. You know, I'm not going to sit around and hope for the best. I'm going to try to do something to change things.
For CKUT, I'm Jules Bujal with the Local Journalism Initiative. On the air with Viewpoints.
The Upper Grand District School is moving away from the Platform X, formerly known as Twitter. The board is encouraging parents to seek updates on their newly revamped website and mobile app. Heather Loney, the school's manager of communications and public relations, explained that the step away from X was driven in part by inappropriate comments on board posts. Here she is responding to journalist Riley Gillespie-Wilson in Fergus, Ontario.
We didn't have the people power to respond to some of these comments that were less useful, less on topic, and then in some cases just completely against our code of conduct. We're finding that, you know, if the people that we really need to reach with our information are our families, our students, and our staff. It just wasn't happening there anymore as more and more people started to leave the platform.
Loney continued to say the new app has features like push notifications from your child's school, an events calendar, and much more. She added she noticed a pull away from X by those the board was hoping to communicate with.
Effective communications, you want to be able to reach your target audience, and we were just noticing that our audience wasn't really on X anymore. We weren't reaching our families, our students, our staff, our parents in the way that we maybe had in the past. You can download it just like any other app. You can sign up for notifications, so you have those updates that you want.
Hoping to offer a more customizable model, Loney reminds residents families will still get a call or email for urgent matters like school closures, power outages, and other important notes. She says the app is more streamlined and also explained there's more to learn and still some things to add.
A parent family portal, that one-click access, being able to access report cards or being able to go into their Google Classroom environment and see notifications from teachers and that sort of thing. So we're looking at updating and integrating the family portal. There's more features that we want to look into and get that feedback too of like what's most useful for our schools and for our families.
You can find the app developed by software company Aptigy on your cell phone's app store. This is Riley Gillespie-Wilson.
Hello, I'm Candace Vetter in Embrun, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints.
Mount Allison University is starting a five-year, $95 million project to renovate the Ralph Pickard Bell Library. It will also be building a multi-sport complex, which will first serve as an interim library while the major renovation of the library takes place. Sackville University President Ian Sutherland outlined plans for the project and added that the multi-sport complex will not just be a facility for the university. It will also host an innovation and creativity lab, a great space for town meets, activities, and initiatives, says Sutherland. This story by Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick.
Mount Allison's Ralph Pickard Bell Library renovation project is expected to take at least 5 years and cost $95 million. But at the end of it, Mount Allison will not only have a redesigned and modernized library, being dubbed a Center for Innovation and Learning, but this university will also boast a new multi-sport complex complete with an indoor walking track and a massive new parking lot on Lansdowne Street. In November, new university president Ian Sutherland came to Tangimar Council to update the municipality on the major project and outline what the project will mean for community members. The most immediate effect will be the addition of 154 parking spaces to downtown Sackville, and with it, the disappearance of the green space that is the Lansdowne Field. Sutherland told council that construction of the lot is expected to begin this spring and be open by fall.
This will be anticipated to open in fall 2025, so in a little less than a year from now. 154 new parking spaces added to the downtown core. And in addition, we will be revitalizing Normandy Field. So you will see that for this parking lot, the Lansdowne parking lot, we've taken away one of our fields. To replace that field, that recreational space, we are currently already revitalizing Normandy Field over by the Waterfowl Park for the use of recreation and intramural sports.
The parking lot will be needed to take the place of the current Lansdowne Street parking lot, which will be used as a staging ground in the construction of a new building next door where the old Allison Gardens rink stood. That new building is slated to open in 2027 and will serve as an interim library for several years while the RP Bell renovation proceeds. And then, by about 2030, it will be converted into a multi-sport complex.
Once it becomes a multi-sport complex in about 4 years, we will have a whole host of activities available in that space for university faculty, staff, students, yes, but also for the community. So there'll be a two-lane walking track. We'll have an indoor space for winter activities. There'll be a AstroTurf in there that can be removed, put back, so you can do soccer in January if you want to, and then take it out when you want to play tennis. There'll be a community event space as well, multiple courts and various sports, pickleball, basketball, soccer, football, capable for large tournaments here in the town, and potential for other activities such as trade shows and proximity to downtown businesses for economic development.
Mount Allison's Director of Facilities Management, Chris Kierstead, explained to Council that the new multi-sport complex would have a high-performance sports rubber court floor with AstroTurf to be installed on top of that during winter months. Sutherland also told Tantramar councillors that the new RP Bell Library will also have community-facing features such as a York Street entrance and an indoor gathering space and outdoor terrace in the current breezeway between the library and the Crabtree building.
So this will be not just a facility of the university. The library needs to be a facility for the whole community as well as communities of scholars, researchers around the country and indeed around the world. And the innovation and creativity lab that we're building will also be open and great space for town meets gown kind of activities, projects, and initiatives.
Mayor Andrew Black commented positively on the project plans and asked Sutherland to talk more about the community access to the new multi-sport complex.
My answer I would extend to the library as well. So the vision is that the library obviously is there primarily for the use of students and faculty, researchers and staff, but that the library becomes ever greater a resource for the whole community and really where people feel welcomed and feel comfortable to come in at any time for a coffee, to engage and so on. So I would want to look at what kind of programming we can have in the library to engage the community. The same answer, but a little bit more extended regarding the multi-sport complex. So if we take the walking track that's going all the way around as an example. What I would like to see and what I envision us getting to when the facility is open is that we have a specific time for seniors walking happens on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2 p.m. to 3:15 p.m. Might not be that exact time, but some period like that. So we have very specific program times where those facilities are completely open to whoever in the community wants to be partaking of the walking track, the pickleball courts, whatever it is. And then also working with the wider community and other organizations and initiatives to host tournaments, to have guest sporting teams coming in that are not necessarily visiting the university, but are coming to Tantramar because they're engaging with other teams or organizations or sports groups here.
That's Mount Allison University President Ian Sutherland talking to Tantramar Council in late November. Work on both the interim library and Lansdowne parking lot are expected to begin this spring, with the parking lot due to open in September and the library in the summer of 2027. The RP Bell construction is expected to run from then until the fall of 2030, when the new library will reopen to be followed by the converted multi-sports complex on Lansdowne Street.
This is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
And we turn back to a story published on January 10th by Heather Watson in British Columbia. The Professional Women's Hockey League keeps gaining momentum in Canada, even beating men's hockey attendance numbers. Players from the PWHL took over Vancouver a few days ago, causing ripples in the local women's hockey scene. The Courtenay Whalers goalie Megan Moore says that this league gives young girls role models and a path to look forward to as they pursue the sport. Moore also says that there's no shortage of demand on Vancouver Island for women's hockey, with tournaments ranging from Victoria to Port Hardy and two teams within the Comox Valley. In Nanaimo, British Columbia, Heather Watson met up with the goaltender to discuss women's hockey in the Comox Valley and the efforts of a professional game being played in BC.
Rogers Arena was filled on Wednesday night as people of all ages and genders cheered on the visiting Professional Women's Hockey League on their takeover tour. The excitement reached the Comox Valley, where the Courtney Whalers women's hockey team celebrated seeing professional female hockey players competing on the West Coast. The Professional Women's Hockey League, or PWHL, is in its second year with six franchises between Canada and the U.S. With talks of expansion already happening, the PWHL launched its Season 2 Takeover Tour to bring women's hockey hype to new parts of the continent. Vancouver was the second stop, hosting the Toronto Scepters and Montreal Victoires in the sold-out Rogers Arena on Wednesday. Game attendance was reported at 19,038, beating the Canucks' season high of 18,940. Courtney-based recreational hockey player Megan Moore says the impact of professional women's hockey is local. Moore says that the opportunity for local girls to see a professional women's hockey game, like the Vancouver match on Wednesday, gives them role models to look up to.
Now that there's an end game for women in hockey, there's definitely, I think people are going to be more eager to push themselves harder and not hesitate to play more competitively and just continue to grow their own game. And from that, I think when they see women, you know, they have role models to follow. It's an opportunity to picture themselves in a similar role.
Moore, who plays goalie for the local recreational women's hockey team, the Courtney Whalers, says the impact of the professional league goes beyond description.
It's hard to really put into words. For me, it's just that community feeling and excitement and the potential growth that is there.
Moore says as soon as the PWHL takeover game was announced, she did what she could to get a group of players together to go.
Well, as soon as they announced the Vancouver game, I'm like, I need tickets. I gotta go. And just trying to get more people to join me.
Moore was a season ticket holder for PWHL Ottawa last year and reflects on the impact the new professional league has on the hockey community.
Obviously, with the amount of hockey that I've played, I've got some different connections and talking to them and just seeing that sense of community and understanding how hard everybody's pushed for this. They've fought against the inequities from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, and just seeing where the sport is going and how it continues to grow.
Moore says that the impact on young female players is major.
And now we have all these younger girls who are, you know, they're so excited. They have some place to look forward to play in their older years. For me, it wasn't there. And I think back to the Ottawa home opener last year, where somebody was holding up a sign that said, like, if I had known this was an option, I would have trained harder.
Moore says the community needs more than passion, with hard work too.
To get excited is one thing, but there's also some work that needs to be done so that we can provide more opportunities for young girls to give it a try.
Hockey has been a lifetime passion for Moore, and she wants that opportunity for other girls and women.
I've played my entire life. I've been the been told that girls don't play hockey. And even my mother, her mom said, when, like, my grandmother said, like, you know, you can't put Megan in to play hockey. That's a boys' sport. And my mom said, I can't keep her off the ice either. So just showing the naysayers and just keep on pushing.
Moore says the Courtney Whalers are made up of a roster of full and part-time players. And in past years, the team have been able to host drop-ins for women with no experience to lace up their skates and give it a go.
We had some very dedicated ladies who took care of organizing referees, scheduling ice times, and talking within the island community, organizing games with different teams between Victoria all the way up to Port Hardy. You can see that there is definitely demand for women's hockey on the island.
Moore says she wants to see the sport grow and encourages girls and women to give hockey a try.
We want to grow the sport. We want to provide more opportunities for women to continue playing hockey into their 60s and 70s. The more people we can get out, the better.
Moore recommends going to their Facebook group to learn more about getting involved with the Courtney Whalers. This is Heather Watson.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
Stay out west, where the Forks Foundation launches the Trail Together campaign. This to help develop and maintain skating and walking trails along the Red and Assiniboine Rivers. Whether it's open for just 9 days, as in the winter of 23-24, or for most of the season, the Nisshtawaya River Trail in Winnipeg is expensive to maintain. To offset the expenses that can reach hundreds of thousands of dollars, the Forks Foundation is calling for Winnipeggers to adopt a meter of the trail. Close to 800 meters of the trail have already been adopted so far, and signs have been installed to recognize contributors. The trail was officially opened on December 31st, marking only the fifth time since 2008 that it could safely be open before the new year. Details with Ryan Funk in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
The Forks Foundation launched the Trail Together campaign. Funds help develop and maintain nearly 6 kilometers of skating and walking trails along the Red and Assiniboine Rivers. This initiative allows Winnipeggers to adopt a meter of the trail, fostering community involvement and pride. To date, 789 meters of the trail have been adopted, and signs have been installed to recognize contributors.
And so what we've done is we invite the community to be a part of that this year with us through the Trail Together campaign. We know that the community loves this asset. They really, lots feel ownership over it even, how they use it to commute to work or out with their families on the weekends. And so inviting folks for a relatively low dollar value of only $50 to quote unquote adopt a meter, put their name on a meter of the river trail, has been something that's important to us and special to involve them in that process.
That was Zach Peters, Communications and Marketing Coordinator for the Forks Foundation. The trail officially opened on December 31st, marking only the fifth time since 2008 it could safely open before January.
So obviously quite exciting whenever we can open as early as possible. And this year was December 31st. So right in time for New Year's. It was that afternoon. We were excited to take down those the barricades, let people onto the ice. And then New Year's Day, we had obviously quite a bit of festivities here at the Forks. And we saw a huge number of people out using just that port rink even before we were able to lengthen down the Assiniboine here. And people are just, out to embrace that winter feel, that winter experience.
Although she hadn't heard about the Trail Together campaign, Mackenzie says she's interested in the idea and would participate if it continued.
But I think that's really cool. It kind of makes it more personal. Like, hey, this is my little section of river, or, you know, I think that's a great idea. They heard they were doing the parking tickets towards the payment for it as well. It's just a really cool initiative to have, you know, these things paid for. Like, it's really cool.
Mackenzie says she eagerly anticipates the trail every year, regularly checking the Fork social media for updates. This year was particularly special, as it marked the first time she could bring her baby son out onto the trail. For first-time skaters like Chris and Mia, they say the trail is something special.
Yeah, I always wanted to try out ice skating. I've lived here all my life and I've never done it before, so this is like the first time doing it. And again, yeah, the weather was like really nice today, so I was like, why not give it a shot?
Mia adds,
I think it's great. It's bringing everyone together. And I think it's something that everyone looks forward to in our winters, especially because it's super cold out. And the Forks has been here for quite a while, so it's pretty historic. And I think it's great that they have our trails, especially when they've expanded over to like where the park is and where the other field is at. I like that a lot.
Looking ahead, the Forks anticipates continuing the Trail Together campaign for the 2025-2026 season. Peter says this isn't the only way they're looking ahead. He explains the Forks is developing a climate adaptation strategy in collaboration with the Prairie Climate Center to ensure the trail remains viable as winters evolve. I'm Ryan Funk.
is how we close our show this week. Thanks to our journalists, Heather Watson, Erica Butler, Jules Bugiel, Ryan Funk, and Ryan Gillespie-Wilson. Our national editors are Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Boris Chassagne, your host and producer. Thanks to you for keeping us company this week, and until the next, ciao.
Local news nationwide.